Hello, everyone. This is Chris Case from My Strange Mind. It is March 4th, 2014, and I'd like to talk to you today about how professionals and intellectuals are controlled in our society. And I think this is a area that is often a huge blind spot. People do not realize just how kind of top down a lot of our control is. And once you are aware of this blind spot, you start to see that it's everywhere, that it's very pervasive. It took me a long time to see it myself, but feels like it's pretty clear right now, based upon what I know. So in order to, have a good kind of top-down control over a society, it's essential that you control the lower levels of society, that you control the way that your average person thinks, and especially your intellectuals who tend to guide the direction of society, who everybody looks to for answers and for authority. Because you can't just have one person saying things and have everybody just follow what that one person is. There's a lot of different places that confirmation has to come from in order for it to feel like there's a real consensus. And so you've got to kind of give the illusion that, well, one, that everybody's thinking, and that lots of impartial, objective minded individuals with strong intellectual capacities are making decisions that are logical and rational and in your best interest and all this other kind of nonsense. So I believe that the state is the main force that controls all levels of society. And it does this through several mechanisms, depending on what area we're talking about. One very easy area to recognize are areas where a particular profession is funded by the government. In this kind of situation, there's often a perception that government funding is objective or something like that, that there can't possibly be any sort of motive behind the way that the government funds things, that it just uses science and there's, I don't know, that may be true in some cases. I wouldn't necessarily make a blanket statement about it in that regard. However, there is a lot of government funding that is, by its very nature, political. After all, how is it decided where money goes? It's a political process. It's a process where politicians get together and lobbyists get together and determine how they're going to spend other people's money. That process of spending other people's money is something they've gotten really good at, and they know quite well how to divvy up other people's money for their friends and for their purposes and to suit their agenda. And there's little precedence that there's the idea that this is not a corrupt process, there's almost no precedence for that. It's almost always a corrupt process. Just the very fact that they're, you know, forcibly taking people's money through taxes should tell you that there's at least corruption in that regard, and why not in other areas too. So that's a pretty big area for controlling people, because, you know, if you want to have if you want to research something and you rely on government funding, you know, you're going to be researching that which is approved by the government. So, you know, that's where a lot of money gets shifted. Now, of course, if you're in a more private sector position where your funding is derived by, you know, donations or private funding of some sort, then you're in a bit of a different situation. It's not as easy to control what all these people think, although there are ways that the government can still control a lot of that stuff, and that large institutions affiliated with the government can control these things. So funding is one, you know, obviously one obvious area. Now, another area that I think is a blind spot for, that's really the big blind spot, is professional licensing. This is an area that I often find really infuriating myself, because there's really no reason to license professionals through the state. And it's really a sticking point that a lot of people create straw men out of. But, you know, of course, the idea is that you've got to, you know, this has been kind of an after-the-fact justification for a lot of this crap. But the idea is that you've got to license these professionals, or there will be no way to make sure that people don't get hurt or suffer bad service or something like that. You know, we can pick examples like medicine. You know, doctors have licenses that they're granted by the state, and that allows them to practice without getting raided by government, you know, goons, basically. It's the kind of gun in the room that is seldom brought out, but everybody knows is there. That if you did, you know, became a quote-unquote doctor and your license was pulled by the state, or you didn't have the proper license, that they would pretty much be willing to use violence to stop you, to dismantle your business and, you know, do whatever they please to you, pretty much, within their little framework of rules and so on. And so that means that anyone who wants to call themselves a doctor, under the definition of the state, has to abide by whatever rules the state sets for them. And of course, those rules are politically determined through parties who are powerful, who are already at the seat of power, who have interest in retaining that power, and interest in not seeing anything change too fast. And so there's a lot of things about medicine that probably will not change very fast at all, as long as it's under the current paradigm. And that has the potential to hurt a lot of people. I don't really want to get into the specifics. Don't want to get too far off topic. But suffice it to say that if the state is wrong, and it does often seem to be wrong about a lot of things, you know, take nutrition, for example, the food pyramid. Then, people are going to be taking advice from bad science, and they're going to be making decisions in their life under the assumption that this is good information arrived at scientifically by professionals who know what they're talking about. And a lot of times it really isn't. It's really not. And it leads to more disease, more death, more illness, more suffering. And it's not without consequences when you control something from the top and force everybody to comply to your dictates. The tighter your grip of control, the more people will suffer. And that's medicine. There's all sorts of other licensed professions. There's law. Under the licensing of the legal profession, lawyers have to take these ridiculous tests to become a lawyer, which I don't know. I guess it means they're probably pretty sharp if they know how to pass that bar exam. But I would imagine there's probably a lot of other people who would be just as good at arguing cases or handling legal matters who maybe couldn't pass the bar exam or who maybe wasted years of their life trying to pass the bar exam. It creates a certain kind of conservatism in the profession. In any profession that is licensed by the state, all that has to happen for you to lose your ability to work is for them to pull your license. And if they pull your license, maybe there's ways of appealing it and whatnot, but I've noticed that most people who are licensed professionals are very cautious. Everybody from the ding plumber who comes to help you with your plumbing. I actually had a plumber here to help change out a hot water heater, and I didn't even really bring the matter up. He was talking about how he's got to do everything by code, and how if it's determined that he's not, doing something right, he could just completely be unable to work, and I could sue him, and even if there was no damage done or anything like that. And I understand there is some a lot of common sense kind of functionality behind many of the codes, as a lot of them are drafted by people who are knowledgeable in their profession. But there is the inevitable corruption in these codes as well. Just, one example would be that hot water heater I had. I'd had a hot water heater for, I don't know, it was probably 12 years old. It was here when I got the place. And it was fine. It eventually, the inner tank leaked and needed to be replaced. So it worked just fine. But for this new hot water heater, there were hundreds of dollars in code changes that had to be made because the codes had changed since the last time. And one of the things included a tank, a ex I think they call it an expansion tank that hooks into one of the I guess it hooks into where the water comes in or something. It's basically just some way of having it expand if there's some need to expand. Which I don't know the all the physics behind it, but it's supposed to keep the water heater from blowing up or, having a pressure blowout of some sort on certain rare occasions. The plumber who I guess he seemed like he'd probably been doing this for a long time. He told me that it doesn't seem necessary, and that it's probably just to line somebody's pocket to, some special interest, probably lobby to have that put into the code so that their product would be bought, so that they could make more money. And the thing about putting it into a code and having it as part of a licensed profession and part of building inspections and all that is whether or not it's a good idea, it then has to be done. Otherwise, people are sued, fined, or whatever. And so, you can then force people to do things that are shitty ideas. Of course, it might prevent them from doing some things that would be dumb, but you don't need codes to do that. You just need standards. And if people don't want to follow the standards, they can face the potential consequences. There's this belief that, really the big difference between standards and these codes is that you've got to have teeth to what you're doing. Otherwise, that this is the statist kind of belief, is that you've got to have teeth on your standards, which is basically the state, coming in and shutting things down and jailing people and fining people and all that kind of crap. Lawsuits. And there may be some level of litigious activity that would occur even with standards. Like if you, let's say there was no licensing for plumbers, and instead there was just certifications that plumbers got because people trusted particular certifications and they were reputable, and they would go get some certification that says that they're then a plumber and that they're certified under some, private organization, and that means that they're, wise to their profession and have experience and have apprenticed and, or whatever else is necessary, and know how to work with pipes and do all that kind of stuff. That would work just fine. And if you, hired a plumbing company that said that their plumbers were certified under such and such organization, and they actually weren't, then you could possibly just sue them and say, "Look, you sold me these services saying I was getting such and such service from somebody who had such and such skill, and they didn't." And especially if something went wrong and caused you damage, you could certainly sue them even without a government, even if you had just private courts and a private law society. So the whole notion of licensing and, plumbing especially, and other trade-based licensing is just patently ridiculous. And it's used to control all these plumbers and to make it so they all do certain things a certain way, and to make it so that can't change very easily. They do it for builders as well. It makes things really predictable, I guess you could say. But it also makes it so society can't evolve very quickly because all these building codes have to evolve. And so you end up with all these houses that are the same, or more or less the same, at their core. And there's not a lot of experimentation done to try to find better ways of living. There was actually a guy in New Mexico who tried building homes differently. And he had the blessing of his building inspector, who was kind of informally, letting him do things, even though it technically was illegal. And he built earthships, what's called earthships, and homes, basically homes that are made out of recycled materials like cans and tires and other things, and you can take those materials and use them to build your walls. And then you put, cement in the wall, or you pack the tires with dirt that you've dug up to build the home, and you put, you know, some stuff around it to make it look nice, and you've got yourself a really durable home that will last a long time, that the main expense of which was probably design and labor. You know, you don't have to buy a bunch of brand new materials for it. You know, there's going to be materials purchased for it, but the expense is going to be minimal, and it's going to have very low utility costs. The whole thing is designed to basically use passive solar and not require a lot of energy, because you don't have it seeping out of the walls and other areas very easily, because, you know, when you've got big 300-pound tire bricks that are full of dirt, you don't end up using a lot of utilities to have to heat things up, because that insulates your home. You don't have to use a bunch of other, you know, industrial or commercial insulations. So, you know, these kind of experiments are important, and they've always been important throughout history, that people be able to experiment, that they be able to experiment with their health, that they be able to experiment with how they live, their homes, their philosophies, their ways of handling disagreements and disputes. And what has happened is, systematically over the past, you know, century or so, especially the past century, there's been a quote-unquote progressive movement to try to get these professions licensed and under the control of the state. And it's, if you ask me, it's not very progressive. It's not progress. All it really is fossilizing things in place so that they still change, but they change very slowly. And some things don't ever change. Well, let's take nuclear power, for example. That's another great area that's completely dominated by government regulators and government power. Nuclear power has a lot of potential. However, the government pretty much defined how nuclear power was to evolve from the very beginning, because their original purpose was to build, you know, nukes out of it, out of the fissile material. And while they may have done a lot of the initial research that allowed uranium to be refined and used for those purposes, there's no particular reason why nuclear power has to be done the way that it's being done right now, with the uranium and these big facilities that have the boiling water reactors, wherein the uranium heats up, you know, water and at very high pressure, which then heats up other water, which then turns a steam turbine and produces electricity. That's that was nice, you know, at first, I guess you could say. For decades, there's been other kinds of technologies that are proven. They've built reactors to do this and to test this, and these would be thorium reactors. There's no, you know, pseudo-scientific stuff about this. This is real science. This is actually government science. But it got put on the shelf because it wasn't terribly useful for building bombs. Thorium reactor, on the other hand, would use a combination of various elements, principally thorium, but also uranium and other elements that I can't think of off the top of my head. And they would all be mixed together. There's several ways of doing it. You can do a solid fuel or a liquid fuel, but I'm familiar more with liquid fuel. You have this liquid fuel, and it has a whole cycle that it goes about. And is able to basically heat up these salts, this kind of fluoride salt. And when you heat up a salt, you're heating up something that is much, it's going to produce a lot less pressure because it's just a liquid. It's not turning into a gas that's going to be really high pressure. So if something goes wrong, there's a lot less that can happen. Whereas in a nuclear, reactor in the conventional sense, in the more widespread reactors that we have, there's a lot that can go wrong, and if certain systems fail, like if every human on the Earth disappeared, just vanished one day, you'd have a cascade of nuclear disasters because you can't just turn the switch on those things. You can't just, they won't just stop on their own if something goes wrong. There's systems that have to be in place to wind things down, and those that can take months. And then there's other systems that have to take care of things that take years to deal with. And that's the reality that we have right now, because these thorium technologies haven't been adopted because it's just not allowed. It's just too difficult. There's people trying to get them in use, but it's been a very difficult battle because the people who already have reactors don't want to have to compete with these much cheaper thorium reactors. They put billions of dollars into their reactors, and even if that's not the motivation, even if it's just an intellectual difference of opinion, they have their little sophistries that they use to try to justify not having it. And as a result, we do not have plentiful, cheap electricity like we would have if we had thorium. If we had thorium, you could have a reactor potentially in the space of a large semi truck. That's how small they can be. You could have a reactor in every population center. You can have like one in every city or multiple reactors in every city and produce power for just hardly anything that produces hardly any waste. And the waste it does produce could simply be buried. And it's not like you'd have to hollow out Yucca Mountain and have it in these containers that are meant to last for thousands of years. This would just be waste that is far less toxic and is able to just be buried in, underground storage without all the rigmarole of setting up these hugely expensive facilities to deal with it that will probably eventually fail anyways. And on top of that, you can use thorium reactors of the sort that I've described to actually process spent nuclear fuel that is currently piling up around these nuclear facilities because they don't know what to do with it. You can take the fuel pools, empty them out, and use them, in your thorium cycle and use them to help power your thorium reactors. And the end product is going to be far less toxic than what you've got out of your nuclear facility. So you've got several uses for it. But, that's not allowed because society is controlled top down by regulators, by professional licensing, by, intellectual sophistries that are taught to people from the time they're children, by teachers who themselves are paid by the state, who are trained by the state, and who ultimately end up retiring with pensions from the state. So, we have quite a tapestry of different forces that are all controlled from the same point. And you can even stack on top of that, how do you control, The people who are unable to work, the people who are unable to enjoy necessarily the benefits of society. You don't want them questioning things. You don't want them out, creating trouble. So that's where you've got welfare, which may help some people, but overall, it doesn't really do that much good. And there's a number of ways that that could be done privately that would be far better and far better at getting people back on their feet. There's, obviously there still are private ways of helping people back on their feet, but when you have these government options out there, a lot of people just take them by default and never do that well. I mean, I've known people who've had, fallen on rough times, and they got back up on their feet by living at a rescue mission and working for them for a while. And after a year or two, you can be back with the rest of society, working whatever area that you happen to have skills in. And have your own place and have your own car and, have what you need to function in society. It's not like, once you get into poverty, you're just never coming back and that you're just going to be on the dole for the rest of your life. However, the way that incentives are structured on, welfare, it often does make it difficult to get off of it because people they don't want to lose what they've got. And if they've got kids, it's especially so. They're kind of rewarded for staying on there because the gap between what you would have to make to make it worth giving all that stuff up and what you get, for being on welfare is pretty big, and it grows the more they expand the welfare state. So you control all these people. Well, they may have some dissent in them. A lot of times that dissent has nothing to do with questioning state power or the very existence of the state and the way that it functions. It's more about where the stolen loot goes. It's not that whether or not somebody should be, doing those things, but more how they should be done, which is generally what discussions about the state are centered around for most people, is how the state ought to, divvy up the loot, how it ought to use violence to control people, how the youth should be indoctrinated into this system. Not whether or not control should be wielded so powerfully from so few hands. That discussion only comes up in regards to questioning private enterprise and free market, or what they at least believe is free market, which is actually crony capitalism that is in bed with the state and controlling people through, a special relationship with the state, not, true free market capitalism, free association. So, there's another thing I didn't even really mention before. I mean, I mentioned funding, but when you create a game the way that the state has created it, you also create a lot of incentives for people to play this game, and a lot of perils if they don't play the game. So, if you create this game in society that is, playing along with state power, with the whole game that the government creates to get money from the government, to get tax money, to get favorable regulations through lobbyists and whatnot. If you don't play this game, it's likely you're competitors will play the game. So it's a rush to press the button. You know, it's like there's some button just sitting there. The government is putting this button out there that somebody can press, and you know that somebody's going to press it. You want to be the first one to press the button. And so people do press the button all the time. And they realize that if there's going to be money to be grabbed at from the government, that they want their piece of it. Because they know that if their competitors get that money and they don't, that they'll be able to possibly wipe them out. Cut their margins down to where they can't compete with them. So that's not a free market. You don't have a free market where one entity can come in and impose rules on everybody and then impose costs, rules, all this kind of stuff on everybody unilaterally and able to dominate an entire market. That's not a free market. But of course, that's the way that schools are taught and the way that people are kind of taught through the way that society operates is to think ill of businessmen and think them as evil and think that the government is your savior and your protector and that they're here to make sure that you're okay and all that kind of nonsense when they themselves are actually the one who created this hostile environment that's gamed by some of the worst people in society. So, another area, so we've gone over the how the poor are controlled. Another area is the elderly. And, you know, when people are elderly, they tend to stop working in our society because they've accumulated wealth or they get a pension from the government, which is mandatory for the most part. They've taken the money out of their check for years, and then they get this pension. And they get their health care and all this kind of stuff. And I'm sure that's helped a lot of old people who can't work in many ways. You know, when you do get old, you often get senile and can't work. But there are other ways, of course, that could have been handled and has been handled throughout history. Doesn't mean that people are going to be, you know, shot or thrown in the ditch or, you know, euthanized or or whatever. I mean, there's all these straw men that come out when you start questioning that part of the way society is controlled. But it's key. It's one of the keys, this idea that the government will carry you into your old age and take care of you and make sure that you die with dignity and all this. It sets up a really bizarre relationship where, you know, the government is making your final, you know, your in the latter part of your life, your decisions about how your medical care is to be funded and done through, you know, through all of its control over the various retiree medical systems and prescription drugs and all this other kind of stuff. So that's a lot of control. That's a lot of power. And, you know, when you're deriving your check from the government that you've put money into your whole life, you're not going to be very... you might question certain things, but you're not going to question the underlying premise that should be done, that should or shouldn't be done. That's a question that won't come up because, you know, you're getting that check. You've paid your 14%, you know, 7% and 7% employer match, you know, 14-some-odd percent, plus all those taxes all those years. You don't want to believe that it was all for naught, and you don't want to see it go away because now you're on the receiving end of it. And And then there's, of course, pensions that some people get, wherein, they've worked for the government in some way, and they then receive a lifelong pension and benefits, and they're definitely not going to be speaking up about anything. And so, a lot of these people who've lived their life and they've seen how things really are and they have wisdom, they're going to tend to keep their mouths shut because the incentives are such that, why would they want to change anything? Unless they're just, like some of the older generation that they do care a lot about their children and or the next generation, and maybe they would actually say something regardless of the potential cost to themselves. But generally, people are selfish and aren't going to want to do that. They might think they would do that or that think that they're doing that, but there's certain things they just won't tend to touch. So, that covers the majority of it, really. I mean, when you can control professionals, when you can control, industries, the way that everything is run in various industries, often very tightly controlled. When you can control the poor who don't necessarily enjoy the benefits of the market in the way that other people do, or you kind of take them out of the market by making it a government stipend type thing. When you control the elderly who've got wisdom and experience and are at least at one time in our history were looked up to and looked to for advice, looked to for Well, here's another thing I didn't even mention is when you take the elderly out of the normal family arrangement where I guess historically elderly were often part of the family as an extended family to where, grandma or great grandma or whomever, I guess it would be great grandma in most cases or great grandpa would be living with you. You'd all be on under one roof. And so as your oldest generation aged, they'd be cared for by their family members. They'd be supported and cared for by their family members. And that would provide the funding for their care. And in exchange, there would be reciprocity there because a lot of the things that people now outsource to other areas could be helped out with by their extended family. But now they don't have that so much. It's all been kind of dispersed, and they don't feel like they really depend on each other. So the old are growing old, without the love and concern of their family members, who would probably be the best caretakers for them at, when they get to if and when they get to where they can't function the way that they need to be independent. And on top of that, there's a lot that they could do besides just sitting around and collecting a check. If they really, wanted to, they could possibly be helping out with watching children and educating them and, sharing their wisdom and sharing their insights and being a part of things, maybe not as much of a physical active part as a younger person may do, but they could certainly be quite valuable to the younger generations who would in turn reciprocate and help to support them. But no, not the way it is right now. Now you're forcibly made to pay into some black hole. The government spends most of that money and then forcibly takes it from the current working generations, blows most of it on bullshit, loses a lot of it in bureaucracy. And then send your grandpa or great grandpa and grandma a check. That's a pretty raw deal. Yet, I guarantee you, most people think that that's a good idea. and that that's beneficial and just and all this other kind of stuff. And those people are controlled. There doesn't have to be some kind of smoky backroom conspiracy for this to be as it is. It just is the way it is. It's the built-in ignorance in the way that our society has developed. And I don't doubt that there was probably much of it was probably planned by people who were, long-term thinkers who saw advantages in things becoming this way. But ultimately, it at least from my own value system and my own preferences, which I believe are also shared by a lot of other people. If you care about, your family and your children and not wasting a bunch of money and resources on government and forcing people to do things a certain way, then this is bad for most of us. It's only good for people who are on the receiving end of it or who have positioned themselves to take advantage of it. But even then, a lot of time that's a defensive position that they're doing so defensively because they know that if they don't do it, somebody else will. So, anyways, just some important areas to understand. This is something I've not really talked about at great length in any of my vlogs or podcasts in the past, and I think it's something that really sheds light on a lot of the dysfunction in our society. And if we understand why things are dysfunctional, why, money is always so tight and taxes so high and government failing all the time, if we understand that the underlying root cause of a lot of this stuff as being this kind of intellectual control that happens, then it makes it a lot easier for us to, even if we can't change it necessarily, to work around it. I mean, who's to say that you can't try to have a strong extended family or find ways of making money or supporting yourself that aren't so heavily taxed and taken from by the state. There's ways around things. There's ways around everything. Or even if there isn't a way around everything, at least recognizing it for what it is can prevent you from becoming too beholden to it. What I would love to have is, in my long-term view of my own life, is wouldn't it be great if I got along really well with my kids and supported them and raised them and had like a really strong extended family with them, to where we all supported one another and even though there is all this government system that tries to impose a specific way of handling your family and your kids and all that, just did what we wanted to do anyways. I think that's what real freedom is all about, And I would love to see that happen. To see us just do what we want to do anyways and be as free and as happy as possible and not see, my kids have to go through a lot of the things that I had to go through to get to where I am, to kind of give them a good start and I just think that there's a lot of extra work that people have to do just to live under this bullshit kind of government system. And they're never, I was never told any of this stuff growing up. Not really. And to figure it out much later in life. And I would love to see my kids know about that when they're able to understand it and able to see the obstacles and not just be hit by the obstacles, not just be taxed and made to pay for a bunch of shit that they could possibly avoid by doing things differently and understanding what they're really dealing with. Because, you know, when I was growing up, I was always taught that taxes were for the benefit of us all, and that you should feel good about paying them, and that the government is here to be a benevolent force in society to protect you and to make sure that you're okay and help the unfortunate and all this other nonsense. But I know that that's not the case. And I've known that for several years, ever since I really started delving into it deeply. And I'm glad I know it, because I don't have to pass on those misconceptions to the next generation. Because they've got enough shit to deal with as it is. They've got a crumbling, you know, society to have to live in. And if they at least know what they're dealing with, then that will sure make, you know, living under a crumbling empire a bit easier. You've got to know things by their proper names. You've got to know how society really works. At least however much you can know. So anyways, that's about all I can really muster on that topic for tonight. I hope that you've learned something from this, and maybe I will get some feedback on how I can improve this understanding myself. So I hope you're doing well, and I guess until next time.